Welcome back to the Ignite podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bell. Today, we're delighted to have Kamal Gupta. He is a CEO and co-founder of Omnistrate. We met each other through YC Demo Day about a year ago and made an investment in fair disclosure. Kamal, welcome to the show. We'd love to get an intro from you for the audience.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. I'm, as Brian said, I'm founder and CEO of Omnistrate. Before that, I spent 13 years at AWS building more than half a dozen cloud services, and then spent 3 years at Confluent growing their cloud business and running the Kafka engine across all the channels over there. Yeah, it has been a tremendous journey, and now we are out on a mission to make life easy for everyone to build their cloud managed service offerings in minutes.
That's amazing. So yeah, tell us more about Omnistrate, how you came up with the idea, what it is, who's it for, all that stuff.
Absolutely. So, you know, as I was saying earlier, right, like we, you know, our mission, first of all, is to really just help the enterprises to transform their Docker images into multi-cloud SaaS services in minutes. You know, we were working at, I was working at AWS since 2007. I worked on a bunch of services from SQS to auto scaling, RDS, Elastic Cache, Aurora, and a bunch of others. And after building many of these, I realized that there is a we are essentially reinventing the wheel and building the same undifferentiated things again and again. I think the reason was very simple, which is the cloud abstractions for building the SaaS offerings are pretty low level. What was interesting then was talking to our peers or my peers is that they were also going through the same pain. And that's where it clicked that they got to be a better solution than this. Mm. And, often SaaS has revolutionized the, whole startup community because, it just really allows us to find the product market fit, get accelerate the revenue and the customer growth. But the challenge is building the SaaS itself had become a bottleneck, and it takes a lot of effort and time and energy. And so we thought, why don't we just make it simple and make it easy for everyone to just build and operate their services, and they don't have to worry about their undifferentiated things, and they can focus on what they are best and focus on the differentiated things for themselves.
Yeah. So, for the layman out there, what exactly is it? Where does it fit in the stack? You said it. These cloud services are pretty low level, close to the hardware, so to speak. So, where does it kind of fit in the stack? Is it in between kind of the application layer and the infrastructure layer, which is like S3, EC2? Is it something in the middle? So, yeah, describe what it is.
That's exactly right. Right. So there are a set of infrastructure. If you take a look, the bottommost layer is the data centers. Then you have the set of infrastructure layer services, which we call infrastructure as a service, typically, that includes services like EC2, EBS, EFS, S3, networking services, load balancer, right, certificate rotation. So these are the common infrastructure services. Typically, any software or any cloud services are built on top of it. And then you have the layer of the platform services or the software as a services, where you are either offering database as a service or queue as a service or certain application as a service. So then you build your software as a services. It could be a CRM, it could be HMS system, it could be any one of those things offered as a service or built on top. But the problem is that going from the infrastructure as a layer to building the SaaS is a huge gap. And that's where you need this layer, which is entirely missing from the technology stack, that we're fundamentally making it easy for everyone to just
focus on the application layer, focus on what your customers need without having to worry about all this middleware kind of software stuff that sits on top of kind of the core infrastructure. How would this differ from something like historically, like Salesforce bought Heroku a long time ago? Is that kind of like a similar kind of service where maybe it's even a little higher up in the stack?
Yeah, I think it's I would say the two I would say differentiation. One is that if you take a look across the industry, many people or many companies have successfully built this technology. Like you take a look at Confluence of the world, Databricks, Snowflake, MongoDB, Redis, or even Workday, Pulley. You take a look at even Razorpay as a banking service, or our Rippling as employees, or Salesforce to your point. all of them have some sort of a control plane. And but the challenge is that they have built a control plane for their technology. Nobody is democratizing the technology to everyone. Like even if you take a look at inside the cloud providers, AWS, GCP, they all have the control planes. I mean, I was the first one to, one of the initial team members to build the first version of the control plane at AWS. And that control plane is used again and again inside AWS. And what the challenge is that none of those existing vendors are democratizing it with the rest. So everybody is essentially rebuilding for their own use case. And that's one of the insights is to, hey, why don't we just democratize it and make it simple? To second to your point about where it fit, you're 100% right. It fits right in where Heroku, but I think this use case is slightly different. Mm-hmm. While the Heroku, you can think about more like, hey, I have an application, I want to do a deployment. This is more like, hey, I have an application, I want to build a SaaS. Like this is a new way or new generation of how the software is delivered, right? Mm-hmm. In the old world, you take your software, you license your software, you give your software somewhere else, or you deploy it internally. But today, if you think about both externally or internally, it's you're not giving the software as a licensed software. You're building a SaaS. Even internally, the platform teams are building the services so that application teams can then consume in a self-service way. So that the paradigm has shifted from just being deploying things to building as a service. But building as a fully managed service takes a lot of effort, and as I was talking about. And that's where we need this control plane technology.
Yeah, amazing. Thinking back to, I mean, you and I overlapped at AWS a bit, and then I went over to Microsoft. How much of that culture have you brought to your startup from AWS? Because you were there for a long time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we often say, and I think to strongly believe in that, that work shapes you more than anything. And I think my experiences at AWS and Confluent has definitely shaped me in many different ways. We learn like a lot of things about the long-term thinking, you know, the customer obsession, think about focusing on getting the results and having that grit to getting the results done, right? Then at Confluent, I think, you know, from having that appreciation of humility and being that people-oriented culture, right? And people like, how do you champion the team and put the team up front and value the team really to, because at the end of the day, your product is as good as a reflection of your team, essentially. And so how you put together the smartest team and how do you really champion that team and put that culture as a notion, like core notion, which holds the team and build the best, enable that team to build the best product forward. So I think I would say it's a combination of both, like my experiences that just pretty much shaped what we are trying to build a modified version of Thomas.
Yeah, I love that. And when you left, are there any leadership principles? You were describing some of them, you know, long-term thinking and such. Are there any that you're like, you know what, I'm not going to bring that to my company?
I'm not saying necessarily. It's very important as a business. There were a few leadership principles, let me put it this way, different places where I think it's important as a second degree. I'm not so sure it's a first degree. Maybe it was important in a business, in that business context, it was important as a first degree thing. But in the context of what we are building, I think it's important that the leadership values are also aligned with what we are trying to do. So, for example, the frugality as one of the leadership principle. I wouldn't say necessarily that's a first degree order business. I think for us, it's more important to win our customers. Because I often say to my customers as well, only when you win, we will win. And I think that is true out and out in our, like you take a look at our pricing, the way our vision is set up and how the product is built. Everything is, you know, even the whole organization structure is in and out, essentially laid down from that point of view. And not necessarily, again, I'm not saying saving cost, because I don't say if you are expensive, then you're going to pass the expense to your customer. I'm not saying that's not important. I'm just saying that there are certain first degree things of the core to the business. And some of the leadership principles are actually associated with the business context.
Yeah. Were you at Confluent before or after AWS?
After AWS.
Okay. How did that culture kind of differ as you entered a whole new, another big, you know, Confluent's a pretty big tech company. Like, how did that culture differ?
I think one of the fundamental for instance, was A, there was a transparency of you know, a factor that was to my first reaction was astonishing in some ways. I was like, wow, that was too transparent, right?
Mm.
And so, like, literally, every team member was trusted with the most confidential information with a high level of trust. But this was pre-IPO, right? So things changed after IPO, of course. But before IPO, there was a high level of trust with the team. And the team did an amazing job in actually, you know, really respecting that confidentiality and keeping that, you know, treating the data and the information with for full confidentiality. And it gives a lot of trust in the leadership.
Yeah.
So that was one. The second difference I found is a lot of the things, the way that operated at Confluent was a better hybrid mixture of bottoms up and tops down. You know, the leadership style, as opposed to, you know, some of the previous experiences was more heavy on tops down. And, you know, that both, so, I mean, I can see the advantage and disadvantages in terms of, you know, the operating and execution style. Like, for example, at AWS, right, you know, even though it's slightly more top heavy, but the, you know, it does give, keeps the, you know, a lot of people focused on the execution. As a result, AWS is exceptional in execution.
Yeah.
Just really moving and churning things quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to do a little bit more democratized way, it does bring better consensus, better decisions, but it does come at a cost. It's not free. Like, no,
yeah.
There's no free lunch here. So the question is really, you know, what do you resonate more and what do you want to establish in the culture of your company?
Right. Yeah, I love that. Let's talk about trends a little bit. I mean, you've been in the cloud space for a long time. You've were there arguably from the very, very early years at AWS. And what do you kind of see happening now? You know, we're a good 15, 16 years into this cloud journey. What are you excited about? What's happening now? And what do you see happening in the next few years with cloud and generally SaaS as well?
Absolutely. I think just covering the ground, I think that if you take a look at 5-10 years ago, a couple of things that changed the world, right? One was we needed a better distribution mechanism, and that led to this growth of SaaS companies and the need for the control planes. The second thing that changed is with the cloud, the scale at which the things were operating completely changed.
Mm.
And every software went through the transition where they moved from operating from scarcity of the underlying hardware to abundance of having those hardware. And the question now becomes, how can your software scale? Like, go back, like if you go back like 10, 15 years ago, you know, single machine databases were very common. I mean, look at now. First of all, two things have changed. Like, there is, you know, plethora of the databases out there. Like, for every use case, I mean, there are like, pretty much every single week, we will see a new database on the Hacker News.
Right.
The second thing that has changed is each and every one of them, you will find them horizontally scalable, beautifully distributed. Like, nobody will come up with an architecture today which is like single machine architecture. And so I think those were some of the guiding principles. If you look at it, how the cloud and the SaaS industry has fundamentally changed in the last 10 decades. Where I think it's going, I think, first, obviously, we are, and everybody's top of the mind, AI is going to play a big role in, you know, continue to, you know, innovate and transition this SaaS industry. And I think the even the notion and some of the work that we are doing here at Omnistrate in making it simple for everyone to transition and transform, AI will play a pivotal role in, you know, making it easier and easier for customers to go from their software to having a control plane. I mean, imagine a world where you can come in and say, hey, you know what? I feel like creating a Postgres service. I got to the ChatGPT style thing. Hey, I want to create a Postgres as a service, and I want these capabilities, and I want this experience. So bring your aspirations and goals. You write it in text in a paragraph, and imagine a service being created. And then you will be able to interact with it and say, hey, by the way, you know what? You know, disable auto scaling. Or create a different plan where I want to deploy things in my customer's account instead of my account. And you will be able to create and interact in such a way. So you can imagine like how powerful it is. And then imagine on the other side, let's say that now your service is created and you want to know what's happening in your fleet. And you can quickly just use the ChatGPT interface and say, hey, what's happening in my fleet? Are there any issues going on? What happened with this customer? Give me everything. I want to know about this customer because I want to look at it from the cost impact point of view. I want to look at it from the operational point of view and get that information
right.
and provide the quality of the support. And like, think about it. How is the world today in 10, 15 years ago? And how much the world can improve just because as a service provider, you have so much information so faster that you can enable, you can be so much ahead of your customers and you can be so much faster in resolving the issues, so much faster in addressing their concerns. And that creates this loop of, you know, so I could, there's a classic, you know, you probably read the book, The Lean Startup, right? The finding the product market fit, like you do this build, you measure and learn, and you just, you know, how fast you can churn
right.
that thing. And increase your odds of making a startup successful. So those are some of the things that I think how the SaaS industry, in my opinion, you know, is involved.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, you could extend that even the last 20, 25 years, right? I mean, I think back in the late 90s, it would take $10 million just to get a helloworld.com website up. You know, 5 to 10 million of like servers and infrastructure. And
exactly.
now like a teenager with, you know, some free Azure credits from their, you know, from some program to teach kids how to code can spin up something that would have taken, you know, dozens of engineers, you know, months to do
exactly.
25 years ago. And I think what you're describing, which is really exciting, is kind of AI powered creation of what you described, the control plane, but also services and analytics and SaaS, right? Like anyone who's been listening to this podcast has probably heard me say this a dozen times, but AI is eating software, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, it's generating more software and making it easier to make software. So software is like what you described, there's a database for every single use case. And that's just going to accelerate, right? Even more with AI. You'll have a database specifically for even more micro use cases and different services and different data. Yeah, just different everything. You know, cybersecurity for picture sharing, you know, like you
exactly.
name it. Yeah.
It's so core down to everything that is happening in the industry. I mean, today, you go to any vertical, software plays a crucial role. And imagine if the innovation cycle can be improved, the distribution of those software can be improved. All of those sectors will like it will have a profound impact
yeah.
on pretty much every vertical out there. And so that's what we and I think the you know the community at OmniState, we are super passionate about. You know, the impact and the opportunity we have to create an impact on the society, you know, as an overall impact.
Yeah, I love that. And that's why I work in tech and why I love what I do, because, you know, technology just extends our abilities to solve our own problems, right? And can't go back and live in the mountains. I mean, some people do, I guess. But, you know, back to your YC experience, what kind of made you apply for YC? And did you apply for any other accelerators, get into any others? And what was that decision process like? And what was that experience like?
So YC was very interesting. We decided 24 hours before the deadline.
I've heard this exact story many times from founders. Oh, the deadline was tomorrow. So we just put together our application video and yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, maybe just let's apply it. Let's see if we'll get some, worst case, we'll get some validation feedback and we'll see how it turns out. And we applied, you know, I think I still remember our first call. And there were a bunch of advisors and folks out there. The first question was, okay, what are you doing? And we answered it. They were like, what are you doing? And we answered it, like, what are you doing? Like, oh my God. And basically they were looking for, hey, can you explain to me a 5-year-old in one sentence?
Yeah. Can you explain it in a simpler way? What
yeah,
are you really doing? Yeah.
What are you really doing? Right. And we kept going into technology. And I think that was one of the things, okay, you know, domain specific or some of the buzzwords is not going to work.
Yeah.
It's just the simple in one or two sentences to a 5-year-old, how you can describe it. I think that's what they were looking for. Finally, it was lucky that we got there in the third attempt. And I think we also, Omar, who is our advisor as well, and I think he helped a lot because he was on the panel and At some point, he was like, I understood, where it is going, why it is powerful, and things like that. But anyways, going back to the journey, I think it was, YC, we, the reason we joined is basically, amazing network, amazing distribution, amazing momentum to kickstart the company. And really just getting some, build some network around mentors and really cool people with a similar community, and get the feedback, because our product was very much tailored towards the startups, at least for now initially, right? That we, the set of customers we were talking to, we wanted to help them, and it was much easier to just be surrounded by that community and understand their challenges, ask specifically what is important to them, what's not important to them. And so the quality of the feedback and the interactions we were able to have just by being part of that community was amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then I saw on your LinkedIn profile before the call that you're also a venture partner with Pioneer Fund. Tell us about that.
So Pioneer Funds is a essentially it's a unique firm that operates out of basically a bunch of YC founders, and it's more like a, I would say, Airbnb of in some way, I don't know, investment, where they bring in the expertise in different domains from different founders to identify the top companies in mostly YC oriented community. They invest heavily in that, and so they reached out and they wanted to understand a little bit about my experience. So we had a chat, just full disclosure, they are our investors as well at OmniState. So they reached out to us and basically said, hey, would you be interested in joining us as one of the partners? So,
Oh, that's amazing. And that seems to be a trend that's happening right now, founders having a VC side hustle.
I look for, I don't know about, like, as a founder, you already have so much going on, honestly, that every, you can talk to every founder, right? There's no time. But I think the interesting, one of my first questions towards the, for the Pioneer Fund was like, what if I don't have time? They're like, that's fine. If you don't have time, there is no pressure having time. It's not like, hey, there is any minimum commit. So if you don't have time, it can be as low as 0 hours. So I'm like, okay, that's great. Like, if I have that flexibility. But the reason I thought what might be interesting is it's important to also keep up with what's changing and how the market is evolving. What are the new trends? What are the new ideas that are coming out? And that helps apply, at least understand broadly where the market is approaching, is going. And I said, I think any entrepreneur is very, very important to not live in your own bubble, to also keep, you have your, you of course you have to focus all the time, but it's like that 1% insurance that you always have to keep on the side, where you're just always keeping up with the market. Like, we read about, like, even though it's not like OmniState is not like building AI models or anything like that, but you still have to keep up with some of the market trends that are happening, where the market is going, where the opportunities are there. And as an entrepreneur, you always have to be, think about where you can create the most impact. Maybe your technology have applications in different areas where you can create a positive impact, and it's all about creating impact. It doesn't matter, like, the technology doesn't matter. The core question is how it is applied and how what impact it can have.
I had a funny and that's that's why we call the team Ignite, right? Our venture fund and our syndicate is Team Ignite, because we want our LPs and mentors and partners to help ignite startups. And I had a member recently go, well, I don't know if I can join because I can't help 100 companies. I was like, oh, nobody's expecting you to go help 100 companies. You kind of help where you can and where it's a good fit. And so similar situation with Team Ignite. Not everybody's working on Team Ignite, even though we have thousands of people. Some people are really involved, and some people are completely,
That's exactly
I never hear from them, and everything in between. So, would love to switch to like a quick rapid fire round as we wrap up. What's one tech product you can't live without?
That's very interesting. I guess my MacBook Linux and Win.
Oh, you running Linux on the MacBook? Like a dual boot kind of thing?
I have my Linux server, literally. Sitting next to me, big server, and I just log in from a MacBook to that Linux server because MacBook has, you know, it's great from browsing and doing some chores, but I think the core work, you need a powerful machine to, you know, move fast, whether it's compiling or doing anything, running any software.
What's a startup or technology company out there that you really admire?
I think there are a few. I would say I am a big fan of Confluent, the way it was built up, the culture thing. I'm also a big fan of Snowflake, how despite having the cloud, despite having Redshift, I think they were one of the pioneers in establishing that is as a SaaS vendor, you can succeed. Today, if you take a look at the investment industry, we invest all of a sudden, we're investing in so many different databases, queues, streaming, searching. But if you go back like 10 years ago, none of us, investors have the thesis. There was no validation that will there be any exit, any success path for any of these companies as a player outside of AWS or outside of the other major cloud providers. And I think the Snowflake was, you know, probably the first one, right, to prove that success, among the early ones, let me put it this way, to show the success. And I think that has ignited the level of innovation now because, you know, so many new vendors, it gives them the encouragement to really do the, like, build the SaaS and get the better distribution channel and just move fast on that.
Yeah.
And I think if that were, that was just a trigger point, in my opinion, in broadly as an industry, as a technology industry, that I think that's one of the reasons I think.
Yeah, I love that. Speaking of distribution, given where you play in the stack, kind of in between the application layer and kind of the infra layer, what do you think of cloud marketplaces and that kind of distribution channel with co-sell and things like that? How are you thinking about that stuff?
No, I think they play a humongous role because one part is about getting the software distributed. The other part is about getting the mind share and basically getting in front of the customers. And how do you get that? People have to discover you. The other problem is that from the now, like even today, Omnisuite, we are a 1.5-year-old company. And if you take a look at how many SaaS vendors we have, probably have 100 SaaS vendors already. So imagine, right? Like, think about it. Like an average Series B, Series C startup have hundreds of SaaS vendors. Now you have to, it's really, really hard to get in budget approval and everything and keep track of all these costs across different these things. And so a lot of these companies are going through committing their, commit with one of the vendors. And having that ability to be able to control the budget in one place and then decide where to spend, it just gives an enormous, you know, from the finance, at least from the CFOs and the, you know, the FinOps, you know, segment, it gives them a lot of, relief from the headache of managing the budget across the companies.
So yeah, I think you're instantly on Microsoft paper or Amazon paper and it's a unified billing, unified deployment.
Unified billing, no contract nonsense, like that paperwork of 6 months and getting into the enterprises is gone.
Yeah.
Right? And all of these things, what is this telling us? It's telling us world wants to move fast. We want to remove all the blockers, the legal contract, the billing nonsense. Or these are just blockers. Otherwise, the deals will just get stuck in procurement. It will take 6 months to a year. Now,
that alone is worth the price of admission. And I think Azure recently lowered their take rate to like 2%, 2.5%. Exactly. So there's really no reason not to. And speaking of Snowflake, I mean, we closed huge deals with Snowflake on the Azure Marketplace. I mean, I can't even say that the I'll put them like north of 8 figures, like huge deals with Microsoft customers.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it's definitely a place where we help our portfolio companies. We have lots of partners and like Tackle IO comes to mind and Sassify from Spectre Systems and a bunch of others.
Exactly.
That's where I came from is cloud marketplaces. So
You also ran it at AWS as well. So
yeah, Yeah, I led the AI category AWS on the marketplace, and then I went over and led all the categories on Azure. So it's a big reason, you know, we invested in you and other companies like you, because we look at, okay, can we help this company accelerate in the cloud channel? And can we get them transactable quickly and get the co-sell quickly with this company? Because once you do that, you can unlock just huge deals with you know, Microsoft and Amazon customers. So
yeah, we just got listed on AWS Marketplace. We still have to go to the other marketplaces, but it's one step one to get ourselves listed on
marketplaces. And I think the general advice there that I give founders is you want to be on all the marketplaces and all the clouds, and starting with Amazon, obviously, but then moving on to Azure very quickly. And you want to get to co-sell, which requires you to have either 100K of trailing 12 months consumed revenue or influenced revenue. And influence can be, oh, okay, it was deployable in the marketplace. Somebody deployed it, my solution on their tenant, and it started spinning Azure meters. So that's influence revenue. So you want to get you want to get transactable and deployable as soon as you can. Especially, you know, how do you guys deploy? Is it like a CloudFormation template with containers and stuff like that? Or
we are a SaaS company, but we ourselves are a SaaS.
Yeah.
Such. So the customers can directly, just consumers with directly the direct APIs or GUI or other interfaces. But when we say we are, from our point of view, the marketplace is essentially solving that, you know, the legal barrier hurdles and the billing hurdles and the challenges around people to understand what we do. And co-sell, that's a really, really one of the biggest reasons, right? Like super important, because it's really establishing that path. Like how many companies will go to AWS or Azure? If you have to make a guess, right? How many companies will go there? Hey, I am working on building a SaaS. And what are the tools? And imagine, it is like, yeah, by the way, there is a company which is solving that. And, you know, and just by partnering with them and co-selling with them, it's a huge win-win equation. That customer who is building it is going to build really fast. They're going to accelerate their revenue by years. So underlying cloud provider wins, they win. The customers who are consuming the services, they win. So it's ultimately, and from the cloud provider's perspective, it's double whammy, right? Like you think about it, first of all, the service provider who's building the service now has accelerated their revenue by 2 years. But whoever is a consumer of it will also accelerate their revenue. So all of a sudden, it's just a significant acceleration of the revenue, and it's a win-win equation across all the board. So I think, to your point, like at least for our case, I think or in many cases, I think any case, I think that somebody should strongly consider a marketplace as a listing and really understand like how in different ways. But I will also say that it's not simply just about listing and going away. It does require one active work. There is a lot of advantages.
You got to have some product market fit, I think, before you go out there. You don't want to go list on marketplace and expect people to find you, and all of a sudden you go from 0 to 100 or 0 to 1 million of ARR. That's not going to happen. In fact, I would say like until you have hundreds of thousands, if not close to 1 million of ARR, you probably shouldn't even be on the marketplace. You kind of need to be in a place where you're like, I have a repeatable, scalable product that people really want, and now I'm ready to kind of turn on the floodgates, exactly. Open the floodgates and get lots of customers. And I think to your point is exactly right. Like you just can't if you sell crackers, you just can't put crackers on the shelf and expect people to buy them. You have to market them and give samples out. And, it's all the same stuff, right? But it's software.
Yeah. And even the cloud providers, I mean, they get so many companies. They're not interested in dealing, like hand-holding each and every one of them. They're only interested if you have a repeatable sales at the first place. If you have a great story of, co-selling, right? I think that, so you need, you will only have that if you've identified the use case to your point and having the product market.
Yep. So you worked on Kafka and Aurora?
That's correct.
Which project was, for the audience, what are those two platforms and which was more challenging?
So Aurora was more about the traditional databases and trying to reinvent and moving I think I've mentioned earlier in the call about moving the problem from scarcity of the resources to abundance of resources. And I think relational databases traditionally have been built such that, hey, how to run optimally on a single machine, as opposed to take advantage of abundance of the machines out there. So how do you really scale relational databases. And I think we came up with a fundamental novel architecture, back in 2012 and 13 to really make that possible. It was an amazing journey. We had to pretty much, it was a fourth implementation. Like we wrote something like now, we wrote something else now. It took us 4 times. But the good thing was we were churning so fast, like within the 6 or 8 months, we were at the implementation that we really wanted committed. And then we were persisted through that for a few years. And it was one of the fastest growing service at AWS for at least until I was there for the essentially 5 years after, we launched the service at Oracle. Same thing with Confluent, right? Confluent has an amazing run with Cloud Journey. When I joined, we were very early in the Cloud Journey on the Kafka side. We grew that business massively. The challenging was slightly, I would say, different in the sense that in the case of Aurora, it was pretty much a reimagining of the databases. In the case of the Kafka, it was, hey, there's a technology which already is distributed, which already works that way. But how do you make the technology work now in a more cloud native way across different cloud providers and provide that all the attributes of a SaaS service, like from availability, from reliability, from performance, from cost. Customers will compare the latency that they will get on their on-prem with what they expect on the cloud, and they want to get that. So it doesn't matter whether there is a noisy neighbor problem, whether that zone is going down. That's not their problem. As a managed service offering, they were looking for the same experience that they can get from an on-prem machine, which is completely controlled environment. All right. So how do you take that a little bit of the uncontrolled environment in the public cloud and really do the software magic to provide the same experience? So that was the challenges were more around that. So yeah. I would say they were challenging in their own ways.
Nice. What's the most influential book you've ever read?
I would say I'm a big fan of Lean Startup. There are many that comes to mind, but that's always, I like to go back every 2-3 years and I just remind myself that's the basics of thing, because as an engineer, it's very, very easy to fall into the trap of building things and not realizing the value of it. And we often collect so much debt software waste that we get burdened, and often many companies die essentially because of that burden of maintaining the software waste. So I think, how do you run lean?
Yeah.
How do you be scrappy and leave your ego aside and just, get the feedback quickly, even the software is not that initially great, and go into that build, measure, and learn cycle and identify what questions to ask and run that loop really, really fast. And I think that's the key to finding. It's a little bit, orthogonal to how you run the projects at big companies, because you have a big company, you already have a proven model, you have proven processes. And so you given a project, first of all, you have a lot of the foundation that is already there, and you just follow that process essentially to make that work. And if you try to apply the same mechanism in a startup, I would say the chances of the failing is actually much more, as opposed to you really moving and iterating really quickly, right? And there's a proven, like AWS is a classic example of that, right? Like, or in fact, the whole Amazon, it always followed that mantra of creating an MVP, getting in front of the customers very quickly, get the feedback, and then continue iterating, as opposed to going into the research shell, work for 3 years. By the time market has moved on, customers are moved on, the dynamics have changed, something else has happened, you never know, right? So it's important to stay in touch with the environment that in which you're operating, because remember, the most important thing is not the technology. The most important thing is to create an impact. And you can only create an impact if you are in harmony with the environment you are in.
I love that. I love what you described there, which is the technical debt, but it's really what leads to that is building stuff that people don't want, right? And having what you might call customer discovery debt. You're not getting out of the building enough and asking the tough questions on how valuable this is, or and getting the feedback from customers and building the MVP of literally what solves their problem. You know, because a company just is that. It's a series of MVPs to solve problems, right? And
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a series of experiments. And proving, you have a bunch of hypotheses. You want to validate those hypotheses. And you just need one hypothesis to be really valid. That's it.
Yeah. I love that. So for folks listening that are interested in OmniStrate, like what kind of companies are you looking to talk to? How do they get in touch? And how do they know that you're the right solution for them?
Yeah, anybody who has a software looking to build their SaaS, do you have an open source software, or you have a software that you want to deploy in your customer's account because of the privacy issues, security, cost reasons, all of those customers, you want to, your platform engineering team, want to build an internal SaaS to help your application teams to move in a more independent way, you know, OmniStrate can really help you in terms of building and operating these things to really lower down your operational cost in maintaining these things and building the same depth again or same differentiated stuff again and again. And that take away that grunt work away.
Love it. Well, I could have talked to you for another hour. I know we're kind of at time here, but thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you for having me. It's great. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.